Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, James Lawless, good morning to you. Documents show that Catherine Zappone thanked Simon Coveney for the opportunity on the 4th of March. The Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, apologised to the Oireachtas Committee for creating the circumstances that require a second hearing in a week on the same issue of the appointment of a special envoy. He faced further questions from the committee in the last day or so, and I think we know the story of it at this stage. But what we're moving on to is that this report done by Sean Fleming for the Fianna Fáil thinking, which is taking place today. It says Fianna Fáil concentrated too much on Sinn Féin in the last election campaign, and the party was damaged amongst young people by the stance of many of its TDs against the repeal of the Eighth Amendment. That review of the state party has found. The document has been circulated to members of the parliamentary party last night, and it's due to be discussed by TDs and senators today at what is expected to be a stormy meeting during the party's thinking in County Cavan, at which party leaders and Taoiseach Micheál Martin is likely to face severe criticism. The report, which was based on a review of the party's electoral performance but also on a survey of the members, identifies a number of reasons for the party's disappointing performance in the last general election. The report is critical in places of the campaign run by the leadership and party headquarters, citing the late appointment of a director of elections, a conservative and cautious manifesto which had insufficient involvement of the party's front bench, and an ineffective use of social media. It also concludes that the party leadership talked too much about what's called another party, i.e. Sinn Féin, during the campaign. The review found that many voters felt that Fianna Fáil had become indistinguishable from the party in government. The financial crisis of a decade ago also marked a major shift in voting patterns. Many party members believed too that Fianna Fáil was not in tune and is not in tune with modern social issues over the stance it took in the abortion referendum in 2018. The party says that the report says the party was also badly damaged by what's called the Votegate controversy in late 2019, when some of the party TDs were found to have been voting on behalf of colleagues who were not in the Dáil chamber. The report goes on to say that the party's identity is weak, with a majority of the party's own members unclear about it. It says the party's support for the Fine Gael minority administration under the confidence and supply arrangement meant Fianna Fáil could not assert an independent position in opposition to the then government, a handicap which was especially evident during its abstention on the vote of no confidence in then Minister for Housing Owen Murphy in December 2019, just 2 months before the general election. It also identifies that the opposition of many Fianna Fáil TDs to this repeal of the Eighth Amendment, which was supported by Micheál Martin, was a factor in turning many young voters away from the party. And it also points to a long record of leaks from the parliamentary party meetings, which often feature criticism of Mr. Martin by TDs as damaging to the party. Now, the Taoiseach will present a response to that report, which was circulated to everyone last night. Sources say, though, there is likely to be heavy criticism of Micheál Martin, and that is reflected in various media that we're seeing also in regards to today, where the Examiner also has a report on that the opposition to Micheál Martin is likely to be quite clear. Now, a challenge to the leadership is not being flagged so far, but even the Examiner today is saying that the report puts the blame for the party's poor performance on a number of key factors, many of which I have outlined to you today in regards to that. A total of 190,000 people voted for Fianna Fáil in the local elections, but did not vote for the party in the European election on the same day, which is an interesting statistic. The report found there was inadequate coordination, is what it calls, between the local and European elections, and says that Fianna Fáil should immediately review the selection process and implement an appropriate methodology as a matter of urgency. It says the party should put in place a centrally coordinated intensive marketing campaign for candidates, that there should be what it calls much greater coordination between the European and local elections, with all party literature referring to both campaigns. A review of the 2019 local election found that the campaign was a success, according to the reports. Well, I'm not so sure about that now in regards to other views that it expresses. Fianna Fáil is the largest party in local government. It has 74% of candidates elected at convention elected, but just 21% of those candidates were female. The report recommends that the party must prioritise the identification of as many candidates as possible under 30 years of age, both female and male, while it says, and I quote, balancing youth and experience for the next local elections. It's going to spend quite a considerable time today, if you like, analysing the electoral performance of the last 20 months, as Micheál Martin is going to be faced with what's called dissension when the parliamentary party meets in person. Now, this thinking, which is taking place today, is in Slieve Russell Hotel in Cavan, and it'll be interesting to see what goes down. The analysis in the report speaks of what it calls long road ahead for the party. And in reference to those leaks again, it says they were amplified in the media and are damaging to the party. It creates an impression of what's called a fragmented party and stifles meaningful debate at parliamentary party meetings. The report says an appointment of a director of elections on the eve of an election is not appropriate, and that there was no overall approval of any front bench group of the party's election manifesto. And that points to criticisms made against Micheál Martin in the past of, if you like, a leader, a top-down style of leadership in the party, that things are decided at the very, very top, i.e. the Taoiseach, and that there is not enough consultation with ministers and other party representatives and members. The review recommends, as I said, that it establishes a national election committee, and that the next director of elections would not be a member of the parliamentary party and should have political knowledge coupled with experience of modern campaigning techniques. Now, that's the gist of what's coming out of that particular party today in regards to the report compiled by Sean Fleming in regards to the performances to date. And without a shadow of a doubt, there will be some a very, very lively debate on that note. And just before we go to a break, Owen?
Yeah, Clem, I should have James Lawless here on the line, Fianna Fáil TD for Kildare North. James, can you hear me?
I can indeed, yes.
James, so Clem has just gone through some of the details there of reports that we've seen and the review that Sean Fleming has conducted. First of all, what's your initial response on the rumblings that we're hearing about Fianna Fáil? First of all, let's take that Fianna Fáil was more interested in what Sinn Féin were doing in the last campaign election.
Well, look, I look forward to discussing the report today with my colleagues. As I think it's the first physical gathering of the parliamentary party in almost 18 months because of COVID. And I look forward to a lively and, I think, a robust discussion. I think the report is largely accurate. I think I would share many of the criticisms that come through in the report. In fact, I've made some of those views known during the analysis. And I would say other things. I'd say the manifesto was too cautious and conservative, are the words used in the report. I would agree with that. I would think things like the pension issue, when they broke at the time, we weren't fast enough to get our message out there and explain exactly where we stood on different issues. And I think in a way, the election caught us by surprise, and that should not have happened because it was evident an election was on the way, if not that month, but certainly that year, or that kind of time frame. So look, it certainly must do better next time. I think we have a great party, I think we have a great package, we've got some great people. But I think that our organisation, in terms of, I suppose, headquarters and the wider organisation, let us down, unfortunately, in that election. And I think that well, the troops worked very hard on the ground, and I thank all my team members and supporters and everybody else involved at national level. The overall coordination and policy, etc., wasn't there. And that was a problem, and I hope that's a problem we don't repeat the next time around.
All right, I'm just wondering, James, if you can, I don't think you can hear me.
The party's own members, unclear about it, relies on candidate-based voting rather than strong support for Fianna Fáil. Would you think that it's weak?
Again, I think that's a very fair analysis. I think that the I think I know what Pinnacle stands for. I think that many of my supporters and members of the party across Kildare will have their own views and probably correlate with mine. But I think that we need to continue. Any successful organisation continues to change and to adapt. And I think that the values we had coming out of maybe the start of the state and the Civil War and on into the huge decades of house building, you know, investments in public state agencies, things building dams like Ardna Croíochta, creating the ESB, creating Bordamona, creating CIE, and really building the early state and then leading on to the Lamass age when we adopted technology, brought in multinationals, had a competitive tax strategy and drove on economically. That's all really significant achievements we can be proud of. But we need to do it all again. We need to come up with a message and a model for the 21st century. So we need to readapt, redefine, and I think we maybe haven't been good at that in the last few years.
Okay, and finally then on this point, James, before we let you go, leadership. You've been on this programme before talking about Micheál Martin, the leader of Fianna Fáil, and also the current Taoiseach. What's your view? Is his position in doubt? Do you support him as the leader?
Look, I support him as the Taoiseach. I think he's running the country through a very difficult period.
Do you support him as the leader of Fianna Fáil?
I think that his focus in recent times has been more on running the country than running the party. And I think, I suppose, as a Fianna Fáil TD, I think we need someone that can do both. Or if that is too much to take on at the moment, perhaps we need to share out the roles. And perhaps, you know, other parties would have, for example, a sort of honorary president that would look after party business while the leader of the party gets on with the government office.
Is that a no then, James?
Well, look, I certainly think when it comes to the next election, it's time for change terms of who might lead us into the next election. Not quite now, but I would certainly be thinking when it comes around to the next time, we'll have to review the overall package and the overall team. And every part of it, including the leader, has to be, I think, up for debate at that stage.
Okay, the think-in takes place today. It'll run until the early hours of tonight and this morning. We might get a review of that tomorrow as well. But for the moment, Fianna Fáil TD for Kildare North, James Lawless. Thanks for joining us, James.
Thank you.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, let's look at some messages coming in. Please wish Granny Bella Sheridan happy birthday. Lots of love from Ger, Bear, Tom and Katie. Have a great day. It says also, regarding the cars, and we were talking about the parts, borrowed a pair of tights. Clem, I would not fancy getting those tights back. Right, okay. But they were great for, I tell you one thing, when the fan belt went anyway. Clem, you can change the oil now from the top of the engine. You put a tube down where the dipstick goes and pump out the old oil. Okay, but you need some kind of a pump for that. I presume you're not going to try and suck it out the way some people have got petrol out of tanks in the past and then you end up with a mouthful of it. Whatever about a mouthful of petrol, I wouldn't want to end up with a mouthful of oil. Clem, it was called the distributor cap. It was. There was a rotor arm underneath and the points. Good man, Jim O.C. in this. Great contributor, by the way, to Paul Powers Connect 4 after 6 in the evening. That quiz that seems that tries to link between tunes, get the common link. All still available to buy for older cars. Really? I didn't think there were any cars on the market now that would have distributor caps, rotor arms and the points, which you'd have to use a little nail file to put between them to sharpen them up or maybe change the gap or whatever else. How does Owen get to work if he doesn't drive, says Liz. Yeah, he's a very fit fella, I have to tell you, Liz, in regards to that. Why do they have to go to a hotel for 2 days for a think-in? It's an unreal waste of time, says May. Please wish our daughter Annabelle Walsh and Prosperous a fabulous happy birthday, 14 today. Hip hip hooray! Lots of love, Mam, Dad and all our lovely family. And Pádraig Nally was the man. Yes, he did. He shot the traveller who was known as John Frog Ward in Mayo. That was the case. Thanks for all the reminders from our listeners. Now, yesterday on this programme, we spoke with Councillor Dara Fitzpatrick, Fianna Fáil Councillor, who, when we spoke, was a patient at Naas General Hospital. And Dara got in touch with us because he wanted to underpin and emphasise the types of pressures and demands that are on our front line workers. Now, the good news is Dara has since been released from hospital and is on his way to recovery. But we thought that we should bring you this again, and after this we'd speak with Joe Hoolan of the INMO.
Well, as we've been hearing and as you've been saying, Clem, the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation are claiming that around 50 nursing posts are unavailable to cover frontline services in Naas General Hospital. The INMO added that Naas General Hospital management failed at a recent meeting to produce realistic proposals to address the staffing deficits on frontline rosters. Well, one man who's in Naas General Hospital this morning is Fianna Fáil councillor on the Clane MD, Dara Fitzpatrick. Dara, good morning to you, and first of all, how are you?
Good morning, Owen. How are you? How are you? I'm not too bad. I'm feeling a little better this morning, thank God. I'm on the road back to recovery, and I'm feeling good. I was taken in last Sunday morning through A&E, and I had a fairly bad prognosis. Last I spent 4 nights in CCU, and I'm now back out in the ward of the hospital, but I am on the mend. And just from a personal point of view, I've seen firsthand here on the care and the pressures that's understaffed within the hospital. I just give you a typical example. Here last Monday morning, I seen a nurse. There was no care assistant in the ward here last Monday morning. The nurse had to do all the work, which is administering all the medication to all the patients. She had to wash every patient. She had to, there's two patients that are particularly ill within the ward, and she had to hoist them in herself. Like, the pressures that she's under, and I'm being honest, she came round to give me my medication at around 6 o'clock in the evening that evening, and the sweat that was coming out of the poor lady was heart-wrenching to look at her, to be honest with you. And that's just one typical example of what's going on in here at the moment. If I was to say anything, I'd say it's absolutely bonkers, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But the care that we're receiving as patients, I couldn't fault it in any shape or form. It's excellent, and they're trying their absolute best under the worst of working conditions.
And these are the same people, Dara, that, you know, we stood out, we applauded. We were calling for, you know, more supports for them, because they have been through the mill and still are going through the mill in terms of the pandemic. But it's not the people who are in the hospital. It's quite the opposite. It's the lack of people, lack of staff in the hospital.
The lack of staff. Like last night, like for example here last night, the staff changes at 8 o'clock. So that it's 8 to 8 in the morning. 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock in the evening. And then it's 8 o'clock at night time till 8 o'clock the next morning. So there's a handover from about 7:30, and then the new nurses come on for the evening. Like last night, we had one nurse on here for the whole night, and to be honest, the ward that I'm in was fairly active all night, and I was lying down flat, I was asleep in my bed, but I could hear him, and he worked his brains out last night, and I just felt so sorry for him. Do you know what I mean? As an individual, to have to come into a work condition that like that. All I can say about staff in here, they're very positive, they're very happy, but morale is at an all-time low. And just, this is not a nice thing to have to say and to wind it up with. The staff in Naas Hospital went through a terrible episode last week. They lost a member of staff in here. And between shortages and that happening last week, morale is just on the floor, to be absolutely honest.
Morale is on the floor. That's Dara Fitzpatrick. And Dara, we wish you well, and thank you for making that point yesterday. Kira.
Yes, I'm joined now by the INMO's Industrial Relations Officer for Kildare. It's Joe Hoolan. Joe, is Dara's take on it reflective of the hospital staff's reality?
Yes, what Councillor Fitzpatrick described is exactly what our members are describing to us on a daily basis, and exactly what we articulated to hospital management at a meeting last week. The conditions that our members describe are perilous. They're describing unsafe clinical environments on a daily basis. If you look at the hospital today, it has over 20 patients waiting for beds in its emergency department, and that is a department which is dangerously understaffed. So what Councillor Fitzpatrick describes is exactly accurate, and it's extremely worrying.
Joe, what are the hospital management replying to staff?
Well, we had a meeting with hospital management last week, and we had, and interestingly, there is no disagreement between the INMO and hospital management regarding the level of vacancies which exist. Where we did disagree was in how to deal with those level of vacancies, and our concern is that there is almost an all right night on the, or not an approach of it'll be all right on the night type approach by management, in the sense that if they wait long enough, this problem might go away. It's getting worse. Our members were very disappointed by the response they got from management last week, insofar as they said they would close no services, they would realign no services, that the hospital would maintain running at 100% capacity, even though they're approximately 50 nurses short. No service can run when you don't have the staff to run it. And our members had sought that the hospital would realign its services, redeploy staff to frontline rosters and stabilise those rosters until they could get recruitment coming in the front door.
On the first of last month, or the first of this month, the Examiner had a story, winter crisis looming. We know that on Tuesday, you actually joined Ciara Plunkett on Kildare Focus, and on Tuesday, the number of people being treated on holidays, or on trolleys, excuse me, in hospitals across the country was the highest figure since the beginning of the pandemic. But yesterday, that figure was topped. Winter is coming, we're still in a pandemic. How are they supposed to cope in hospitals across this country, but in Naas in particular, with 50 posts approximately being unable to be filled?
Yeah, we're heading into a perfect storm again, unfortunately. And again, when we meet senior HSE people outside of Naas Hospital, we meet senior HSE management, we are concerned that the old laissez-faire attitudes are returning, that ED overcrowding is accepted as part of the normal health service. The normal health service that we had before cannot exist going into the future. What COVID wants and what the Delta strain wants and what any future strain of the COVID virus wants is an overcrowded setting in order to multiply. And if you have overcrowded settings and you have a multiplying of the virus itself, then new strains arise. But there seems to be no acceptance on the HSE's part that they need to address the overcrowding. Now, to do that, they do need capacity. The capacity that they can use is in the private sector, pending additional public sector capacity coming on board. But we're very concerned that the old practices of the HSE, the laissez-faire attitudes to overcrowding in emergency departments, are now back. And that simply cannot be the case. The public deserve better and patients deserve better.
Industrial Relations Officer with the INMO, Joe Hoolan, thanks for the time this morning.
Okay, thank you, Ciara.
Thanks, Ciara, and thanks, Joe. It's a very serious situation there, and I think Joe has articulated it well, and indeed, Dara Fitzpatrick certainly brought it home in regards to the way these staff are working. Now, quick messages before we go to the ASDI president. Speaking of a dipstick, isn't that what Del Boy used to insult poor Ronald Rodney with? Yours in humour, says Pat Tinsley. Good to hear from you. Indeed it is, Pat. He called Rodney a dipstick in that. Care staff do the same 12-hour shift that nurses do, but most of the they do most of the physical work, yet their pay is an absolute pittance. Well, it's right across the sector. We're not just talking about nurses at Naas General. Dara made that point yesterday. It's nurses, it's admin staff, it's care workers, all of that. And that situation really needs to be addressed. And as Joe said, management and unions agree that that is the scenario. And Owen.
Yeah, well, the HSE has said that around 14,000 children are out of school and restricting their movements as a result of being identified as a close contact of a confirmed COVID-19 case. It's an increase of about 2,000 on the previous day. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line by ASTI President Eamon Dennehy, who's been with us before. Eamon, good morning to you and welcome to the programme again.
Morning, come on.
14,000 children restricting their movements. This is quite a worrying figure. Is it something that would have been expected before the schools reopened?
I suppose in a way it could be predicted in one sense that, when the schools were opening, because the numbers were very high outside of the schools. So, you know, the children that attend our schools are part of society like the rest of us, and if a certain percentage of us have COVID, well, a certain percentage of them will have it as well. And I suppose it's inevitable that they'll be, you know, inside the school premises then when they go to school, and they'll have it. And they may not even know they have it, of course.
How has the reopening been over the last week or two for your members, Eamon? Has it been difficult, or have students and staff alike coped?
I think, by and large, I think they have coped. Now, as they more or less, the principals that I've been talking to, more or less picked up where they left off in May with the same measures and doing the best they can with it, as they always do. And, steady as she goes so far. But, of course, The numbers in the greater society now, outside of the schools, the numbers there are very high. So it is much more challenging situation than it was even back in May, because, you know, the numbers are so high that we certainly closed down the schools last January under those circumstances. But of course, the big difference now is that we, you know, a huge proportion of us are vaccinated now, which of course mitigates the risk to a great extent, and that is a great relief, I would imagine, among everybody.
Just remind us of the restrictions that are in place then in schools in terms of mask wearing. Is that mandatory for students?
Yes, mask wearing, 1 meter distancing, two meters distancing for the teacher. Ventilating as much as you can, sanitizing, of course, all those measures, staggered breaks, restricting, the contact between students in as much as possible. And that's where it was left off in May.
And finally, and
that worked reasonably well.
Yeah, finally, Eamon, just on the ground as you are, what has the response been from teachers particularly? Because we know before schools reopened, even last year as well, they were worried about being in rooms with 30-plus children and the fact that in secondary schools they move from class to class. How have teachers adapted?
I think one of the things that's worrying teachers in a great way, and it's about resources in general and about backup, I think that people who are working in the actual schools are doing their absolute best and actually using their imagination very well with regard to what would be the safest way of doing everything that they do in the school. But the problem here is we were, for example, promised CO2 monitoring and what have you, and that has not materialised in any kind of, to any extent, to the extent that we had expected it to. And that is a cause for concern. And really, schools do need more support, I would say. Now, they're getting support, and I know that this is logistically a huge effort here, and certainly don't want to start, you know, infighting or nothing like that. The virus is the enemy here. We want to keep our schools open. I think there is evidence, and I think it's accepted now, that teachers and management and indeed the students and the parents are doing everything they can in their power to make sure that stays happening. And okay. They need support for that. They need support. They need advice, and they need material support in the form of equipment, etc.
On that note, Eamon Dennehy, President of the ASTI, many thanks for that update, Eamon, and for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thanks, Owen.
Thanks, Eamon, and thanks, Owen. And Eamon, setting out there starkly the challenges facing everybody involved in the education system as those numbers continue to climb. We want to just echo once again, if you're experiencing any symptoms, parents, if you notice that your children are experiencing any symptoms, runny noses, coughs, things like that, keep them home, please. Don't let them in where they might be bringing the infection into the school. What's a message or two before we go to the break? Don't blame the hospital management. Blame the top brass. Does Councillor Fitzpatrick forget that his party is in government and his party leader is in charge and was health minister not too long ago? Will the hospital crisis be mentioned at the Fianna Fáil play date, as you call it, in Navan today? Well, I'm absolutely sure it will. Man, Morning Clem says another, there are a lot of very disappointed parents and children regarding the upcoming First Holy Communions. The government guidelines state that the church can accommodate 50% of capacity for religious services, for example, communications and weddings. The parish priest had decided to do the First Holy Communion pods of 3 and 4 during normal mass times. To say the children are disappointed is an understatement. With all the doom and gloom over the past 12 months, the children were looking so forward to celebrating with their pals, albeit at 50% capacity. Other parishes are going with the 50% capacity, but Selbridge and Strafford are doing it in pods. Can you put it out there, please, says Stephen. Well, we've just done that, Stephen. And finally, we have a request coming up. Oh, a very special request. I know who this request is for, so I'll do it after 10 o'clock, all right? Let's take a break.